The Tom Woods Show, episode 1347.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, by far one of the most dangerous economic misconceptions of the 20th century is that the financial crisis of 2008 was caused by deregulation. Unregulated capitalism led us here. It's dangerous because the next time this happens, they're going to come up with even worse solutions. So we got to get this one right, and you can if you read my free ebook, The Deregulation Boogeyman. Pick it up at regulationmyths.com. Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here. I mentioned the other day that in light of the three fairly lengthy episodes I've done so far this week and not wanting to clog up people's podcast listening schedules, I decided that the remaining couple of episodes this week would be on the shorter side. So this one will be a little bit on the shorter side. Sometimes I say that and then it just goes on and on and on forever, but I think I'm right about this one. And I thought I would just say a little bit, not the definitive word for all time, but a little bit about the billionaires issue. And I'm going to link on the show notes page to a couple of articles on this subject that have come out recently that I like. Show notes page, of course, tomwoods.com/1347. When you talk about this subject, of course, with libertarians, they're going to say, but look, a lot of billionaires came to their wealth in disreputable ways, or they got their wealth because of the state or the Federal Reserve helped them in one way or another. And I know that. I know that that can be the case. But I think that's a cop-out because it's quite possible for somebody to become a billionaire simply on his own merits and simply by offering something to society that benefits a lot of people. I think that is possible. And just to try to curry favor with the other side by saying, look, we also are suspicious of billionaires just like you. No, not just like them. Okay, not just like them. When was the last time currying favor with the left worked out for libertarians? If you can name me one, that'll be the first. These are not folks who are just one little realization away from hopping on our bandwagon. And they are not interested in making careful distinctions like this billionaire came about his wealth in a way that serves the public, and this one is a crony who got it through government special privilege. I don't see that the left is per se opposed to government special privilege. Unless, you know, if it's a cause they like, if it's a certain type of entrepreneur, if it's a certain type of industry, they're perfectly happy to have special privileges bestowed upon it. So in principle, they're not against that. But more than that, they're not making careful distinctions like this. Remember, the policy guy for Ocasio-Cortez has a Twitter account called Every Billionaire is a Policy Failure. Now, notice he doesn't say every billionaire who used the reins of government to acquire his wealth is a policy failure. Every billionaire is a policy failure. So granting that some billionaires might be indefensible from a libertarian point of view, let's now forget that axiomatic point and think about the issue itself and face it head on. Because as I say, I think it's just a cop-out to say, oh, well, you know, billionaires probably got their money in a bad way. But suppose they didn't. For the sake of argument, suppose they didn't. What would we then say about them? So the first thing I want to point out is this article by C.J. Engel, and it's provocatively titled, Billionaires Already Gave Their Fair Share. How about that? Now, when he says that, by the way, he's not making the point that the top 1% and the top 0.1% actually pay a fortune in taxes. They pay a fortune. The top 1% has fluctuated between paying somewhere between 36 and 44% of all federal income taxes collected. But that's not the point he's making. And by the way, if you were to ask somebody, and the top 10% pay 70%, if you were to ask a lot of these folks, well, what percentage of all federal income taxes do you think the top 10% should pay? I bet a lot of them would say 30, 40%. So they're already getting more than their wish. They're getting probably double their wish. Anyway, what instead, CJ is arguing, is that in a market economy, you have transactions in which people are made better off by a transaction. At least they're made better off than they believed they would be in the absence of the transaction. And so everybody has his position improved. That, again, is why people at a retail store say thank you to the cashier, and the cashier says thank you back. And for people who don't get the nature of the market economy, this might seem anomalous. Why are we both saying thank you? Shouldn't one person say thank you and the other say you're welcome? And the answer is that we're both improved. Our material condition is improved in the course of that transaction. So if I spend $100 on a couple of shirts, well, I value the shirts more than the $100, and the store values the $100 more than the shirts. And so we're each made better off, you know, according to our own value scales. We're made better off. We're satisfying our preferences. So I don't, after that transaction, say, all right, sure, you sold me some shirts that I need and that on my own I would never, ever have been able to produce. Or if I did, I'd have to put my whole life on hold forever and I would be sacrificing way, way more than $100 to do that. I would be giving up weeks and weeks of my time trying to learn how to make shirts and then sew or get the fabric. And so, I mean, this would be impossible. I would lose thousands and thousands of dollars of potential compensation in some other job. So thank goodness there's a store that has already arranged for this. They've dealt with the manufacturer, the wholesaler. They've dealt with marketers trying to get them to carry their particular shirts. They've got the shirts on the rack. They've got them arranged by size. All I have to do is walk in, grab them, pay $100. My life is vastly improved, vastly improved. And I think sometimes people on the left don't get the value of what people give them, particularly companies or rich people, because they think, well, I'm not getting it for free, so they're not really helping society. But no, you're not getting it for free. But if you calculated the effort it would take for you to make that thing by yourself, it's virtually free. I mean, could you imagine, what if you had to make your own pencil? Could you imagine the inconvenience? I'm ashamed of myself. That's a silly word. That trivializes it. It's not an inconvenience. It's an utter impossibility. There's no way you could do it. Impossible. I mean, it would take your whole fortune if you even had one. But instead, you can buy 20 pencils at the dollar store. Okay, that's true. They're not giving you the pencils for free the way the government supposedly does. It gives you stuff so-called for free. But you know what? You could round that off to free compared to what it would take you to go out and manufacture that thing, both in terms of your expenses and in terms of your foregone income, because you'd have to be spending all your time making all your own stuff. Not to mention, there are entire classes of goods that I am quite certain, at least I know how a pencil works, but I'm quite certain most people do not know how a TV works. Or at least maybe they have the gist of it, but they would have no idea how to assemble one. All right, so that would be, you might as well just forget about that. Or how about a router to have the internet throughout your house? You're going to make that? How much time would that take? How much effort? How many resources? So when you consider that, and then you look at the price the retail store is selling you that router for, you could round that off to zero. You could round that off to free. So what CJ is saying in the article is that billionaires have already paid their fair share because on a market, on a free market, they earn their money by satisfying consumers. That's how they earn their money. There's no other way they could earn it. If they got their money by stealing from people, well, then this is no longer an economic question. You just arrest the guy, and then we're all done with it. But if they haven't stolen from anybody, then they got the money through honest exchange. And the vast majority, this is also pointed out in another one of the articles I'm linking to on the show notes page, the vast majority of the super wealthy in America are self-made. Now, I know that self-made is a triggering term because you didn't build that and all that. But I mean it in the sense of they didn't inherit their wealth. That's just the casual assumption. That's not the case for the super wealthy or even just for plain vanilla millionaires, 80% of whom did not inherit anything. So that's also false. But what CJ, again, is saying is that if we have a transaction together and it's voluntary and we each benefit, then who's to say that one party to that needs to pay extra? They've already met all the expectations I had for them. They've already satisfied their contractual obligations, let's say. why would I say you also, now you have to put a roof on my house? Sure, you got me the shirts, but you got to put a roof on my house. You got to build a bridge. I need you to build bridges. I need you to build roads. Why would we think that? We would not think that unless politics had entered into the picture. It would not occur to you to say, in addition to this extraordinary benefit you've bestowed on me, I expect you to, you know, construct the electrical grid in the society. Now, let me read you a couple of passages from this C.J. Engel article. He says, those politicians and commentators who push the idea that billionaires need to give back or pay their fair share don't understand there's nothing to give back and that the fair share has already been contributed to society. There is nothing to give back because an exchange took place, value for value, with the capitalist giving a good or service and the consumer reciprocating with a transfer of funds. There was an even exchange such that there is no deficit or surplus in what one party continues to owe the other. Well, even exchange maybe might not be the best way to put it, but rather both parties are satisfied would be the way I would think about it. Both parties are satisfied. They both entered into the transaction voluntarily. And he says, if a capitalist earns billions of dollars in the course of his investment and subsequent selling of the goods and services he produces, he paid out his fair share in the form of the very goods and services he sold. Now, let me interrupt myself for a moment to say a little something about this whole give back philosophy. It doesn't apply only to billionaires. We hear this all the time. This person wants to give back to the community. If he stole something from the community, he should give it back. But it's much, much better to say he should make a contribution to the community than to say he should give back. You know, look, if you're saying that he got his education paid for by the community, all right, well, he's paying taxes and he's paying for other people's education. So he's already doing that. So if he goes above and beyond, this is not giving back. This is generosity on his part. But also, there is this sense that if you're not a physical manual laborer, or if, let's say, you're just in business or finance, that you have a lot of that, which the income you earn is kind of unearned. You're just a fat cat capitalist who just sits there and collects checks. I realize this is a very juvenile way to think about what these people do, but that is the idea that a lot of people on social media have, and that's a lot of America, that these people don't really work for their income, and they have all this unearned income or unearned comforts. One of the troubles with that line of reasoning is that it would apply to everyone because, so they'll say, you don't deserve all that wealth that you have, or you don't work as hard as I do. You don't deserve that. Now, we could talk all about how we value people's work and what their wage or salary is and that it corresponds to the contributions that they make to society based on how people in their economic interactions implicitly value them. But more than that, we could just say more simply that everybody would at that point need to give back if that's the way we're going to think, because we all benefit, for instance, from the existence of the capital structure that was handed down to us by a previous generation that makes it possible for our economy to churn out so many goods so inexpensively. You didn't contribute anything to that. And yet it benefits you tremendously. So look at all this unearned enjoyment that you have. So how much of your stuff should we take away to compensate for that? And it could go on and on forever. I mean, you benefit from the invention of the telegraph, even now, because that made possible further developments in other areas, which made possible further developments. So should you somehow have to give back for that? This would be never ending. No one would ever be allowed to keep anything, ever. Because, of course, it's all based on a lattice work of innovation and exchange and buying and selling and investment. And there's no way to disentangle it all and say, well, you owe this much for that. You don't. That's the beauty of capitalism. You don't actually owe anything other than the money you're charged to buy a product. You don't actually owe anything. These things actually rain down on you as free benefits. Isn't that amazing? These things rain down on you as free benefits that you don't have to spend a dime for. You just get them. You get the capital structure. You get the amazing abundance. You get the extraordinary convenience. You get all these things. And yeah, you, and strictly speaking, if you want to be a schoolmarm about it, you don't quote unquote deserve it. But who cares? I mean, who cares? Who's walking around with a clipboard going, now, hang on a minute, sir. You know, you don't deserve that recliner. Do you realize the innovations that needed to go into this 40 years ago that you didn't contribute a cent to? And yet here you are enjoying the benefits of it with a, what are you talking about? Eh. You know, the entrepreneurs who develop those innovations factor this in to their calculation of what they'll be able to charge to the consumer. They've already factored it in. They've already figured it out. There's no reason for us to have to be sitting here rebuking ourselves. Oh, my goodness, I really, really should pay more for that recliner. Because think of how difficult it would be for me to have a recliner if some entrepreneur hadn't invested in all this equipment to make recliners possible. We don't even have to think that way. This happens all the time, and yet none of our moral lecturers here about you've got to give back and you didn't earn that and whatever, none of them would take that to its logical conclusion, which is that none of us is responsible for even the tiniest fraction of the wealth and comfort that we all enjoy. None. That required the efforts of basically almost everybody who ever lived working together. So none of us deserve any of that stuff. If we're going to say you only deserve what you put your bare hands to or something, then none of us deserve anything. So why even bother with this line of argument? It's simply driven by envy. What else could it be driven by? I hate these people because of what they have. And as I've said before, if you are thinking about billionaires and what they have for 10 minutes a day even, then that's 10 minutes of your life that's completely wasted. Not to mention, you're a loser. Because I can tell you, it never even dawns on me to think about the lifestyle of the billionaires in this world. Never even occurs to me to think that way. I'm not going to be a billionaire, but like most normal, mentally well-adjusted people, I'm completely at peace with that. I can still have a tremendous range of opportunities and experiences without that. I don't need it. And even if I had it, I was just hearing Jeff Dice the other day saying something that I've tried to articulate, but not as well as he does, saying that actually today you have, you as an average person have much more in common with the rich than you would have 500 years ago. Because 500 years ago, your lifestyle was radically, radically different. Mises has made this point. Your lifestyle was radically different. Whereas today, yeah, a rich person drives around in a really fancy car and you drive around in a not so fancy car. But from the only point of view that matters, the fact that you have a vehicle that magically takes you from point A to B that would have been viewed as something out of science fiction to everyone up until not that long ago in human history, that's kind of the real story. You have shelter that protects you from the elements, keeps you warm when it's cold, keeps you cool when it's warm, more than you could say for almost anyone who ever lived. You have running water. You have flush toilets. You have things that, again, would have seemed impossible to everyone, including the great aristocrats of European history. Now, it's true the rich people may have 7 bathrooms with flush toilets, and you have only 3. But it seems petty to be concerned with that when the real inequality would be some people have flush toilets and other people have to relieve themselves outdoors. But that's generally not the case. Generally, the case is we have varying levels of the same kinds of incredible, amazing luxuries. And I think that's the correct way to think about it. And that's the way to think about it if you genuinely want to live in a society. Now, let me give you a quick example. Take a quick break here. Quick example of exactly the type of innovation that would have been considered impossible 20 years ago. And that has to do with your reading. I mean, first of all, the amazing abundance of books is an extraordinary advance. The question now is not how do I acquire knowledge? It's how do I absorb all the knowledge that's potentially available to me? Enter the Blinkist app. Blinkist is the only app that takes the best key takeaways, the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books, and then just condenses them down into 15 minutes that you can either read or listen to. So in the course of a ride in your car, which is when I like to listen to Blinkist because I'm always taking my daughter somewhere, I can make a drive and come back and I've listened to four books. I've listened to books like The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss and Getting Things Done by David Allen. I highly recommend that you check those out. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/Woods to start your free 7-day trial. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/Woods to start your free 7-day trial. Blinkist.com/Woods. All right, now you've probably heard me make this point before, that the rich actually do something for the economy. They don't actually take their money and just roll around in it until it sticks to their sweaty bodies. And I actually had somebody in the comments of one of my episodes say, oh, for heaven's sake, nobody is saying that the rich hold all their wealth in cash and they just hoard it. And I said, oh my gosh, sir, I wish I lived in the universe you live in. I mean, my life would be so much more peaceful if that were the case. And so then I shared with him a meme that's been going around talking about rich people who hoard their cash. That is honestly the level so many people are at. The rich people are just hoarding their cash, rolling around in it. That's as far as they understand. So there's no word about investment in capital goods, which make the economy more physically productive and increase real incomes. There's nothing about capital maintenance. You have to maintain the whole structure of production, keep it up and running. Nothing about saving at all, really. Like part of the role of the rich is that they don't consume everything. A lot of these folks seem to think consumption, going out and just, if we go out and use up a lot of things, this will make us rich. Because that's really what they're saying. Well, consumption is the key thing. Consumption drives the economy. Well, that's just a misreading of statistics, because that wouldn't even make sense. How could using things up drive the economy? That would work for a while. Then you've used everything up. Then what? So what they seem to think counts is just consumption. But of course, it's not. I mean, first you need to have production before you have anything to consume. And where's the production coming from? How is it being made possible? How is it being made more productive? How's the productivity of labor being increased? Well, by investing in machinery. I love the example of my own father because it explains the point so well. My father was a forklift operator for a long time, and he commanded a decent wage. There's no way, no matter how much so-called bargaining power he had, there's no way he could have had a wage one-fifth as high as the one he had if he hadn't had somebody invest in that forklift. Because imagine how little work he could have gotten done. You have any idea how much these pallets at a food warehouse weigh? Imagine trying to move them around with your bare hands. And then, oh, and by the way, stack them up 30 feet high. Can't be done at all, probably. So it became at least even conceivable that he could earn a decent wage because of the investment in the capital goods. But it's not necessarily a direct, that's not the only way that wages go up, by investment in capital goods. Because as George Reisman puts it, imagine if you're a butler. Well, other than the invention of the tray, it's not really obvious how capital investment is going to change the way you do your job at all. But the way it nevertheless increases the real income of the butler is that, okay, now let's say we're producing widgets, and now we have more machines to produce widgets, and now we can produce a million widgets for X dollars, whereas normally we would have been able to produce only 10,000. Now we can produce this enormous amount. So now everybody wants to hop in. Competition in widget production pushes the price of widgets down. So now I can, with my same dollar bill, I can buy more widgets than I could before, or I can just buy the same number of widgets as before and keep the difference and spend that on something else. And that's how my real income increases. Now I can buy more things for that same dollar. We don't see this as clearly as we otherwise might because the Fed is always increasing the money supply, and that obscures this process by which more capital investment leads to greater abundance and therefore lower prices. But it's lower prices than they would have been otherwise. Now let me return to CJ because I like his last two paragraphs. He says, "The future of Western civilization depends on the socioeconomic framework of capitalism and free markets. It depends on people understanding that the wealth we see around us is a result of capitalism, of the, quote, rich, unquote, seeking profits by investing their capital into the structure of production to produce goods for people and profit as they do it. In the words of George Reisman, the protesters and all other haters of capitalists hate the foundations of their own existence." Then finally, thus to launch an attack against the capital stock of capitalists of all wealth levels is to undermine the very tool that mankind has in fighting impoverishment long term. If we want to overcome poverty, nothing is more important than investment into the structure of production. This is how goods are made more affordable to more people that have never before been able to attain them. To siphon capital in preference for consumption is to siphon the very goods that bring mankind out of its natural state of impoverishment. In order to address the eternal struggle over scarcity of resources, we need capitalists and billionaires. They are the providers of a better tomorrow. Wow, that's shocking. You're not supposed to say that. But there it is. Okay, there it is spelled out for you. All right, now before we go for today, more capitalism for you. This was such a great email to receive. A guy writes to me, and he's become really good with e-commerce. He sells products on Amazon. And last Christmas, he says he earned in December, because obviously everybody buys gifts in December, right? Everybody's looking for t-shirts and mugs and whatever. He pulled in $25,000 on Amazon in December. And it was thanks to a training program that I promoted and he learned from. And he says in a typical month, he earns about $4,000 a month. And so now he's started his own podcast on how to sell print-on-demand products. And you can see it's all kinds of practical advice in each episode. He'll deal with a different topic in the print-on-demand world. So the website is salesondemandshow.com because it's called the Sales on Demand Show. So salesondemandshow.com. And you'll get, he's already got, as of this recording, 10 episodes up. So the five best places to sell print-on-demand products, Valentine's Day strategies, how to get started, how to use Etsy, stuff like that, all covered. Really, really practical podcast. So check it out at salesondemandshow.com. And remember, you can get nice publicity like this for your website if you make sure and get your hosting through my link, my Bluehost link, and you get, because they like me at Bluehost, my folks get the best price that anybody gets. So you get your hosting there and you get nice publicity from me. I've now got 40 video tutorials taking you through WordPress because I updated the tutorials because WordPress has been updated. So we've got brand new tutorials that are fresh and that'll help you with current WordPress, plus membership in my private bloggers group where it's a mutual help group where we help each other when we run into snags. It's a great benefit. These are all free bonuses. All you got to do is just, you got to get web hosting anyway, and you're going to get a great price through me. So you get all these bonuses when you do that. How do you get all these bonuses? What are the details? TomWoods.com/publicity is how you can find out more about that. Thanks for listening.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.